Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan. We're going to start the show off with some Taylor Hollandsworth. It's a song called Devil and Me off his album Tap Dancing Daddy. After that, Johnny Havard and I are going to talk morality and comics.
Afternoon.
So where to start? Well, I'll tell you where. We're going to talk about morality. And we're going to start with the comic book world. Because Johnny's fairly proficient.
Yeah, you can say that. So Johnny, I dabble.
So Johnny, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. It's good to be back, really. It's good to be hanging out with you again. I know that.
I'm telling you, man.
And we used to do this all the time back in the day.
Yeah.
Then you had to go and be Mr. Big Shot and move.
To a smaller town. Yeah.
But
you Big Shot, you.
It happens.
We're talking about that, though. I think that's a good place to start. Mm-hmm. I think that sums it up for us. It's like, if people were to get a better idea of demographically who we are.
Yeah.
Is you and I are both from the South.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The Deep South.
Oh, yeah. I'm from deep Mississippi. Like, deep enough to be in the backwoods, but not deep enough to be out on the Gulf Coast. So, which is a different environment.
And I come from a more northern part of Alabama, mm-hmm. but I moved down here to this area, to Mobile, which mm-hmm. the area Johnny's talking about is about 30 miles north.
Yeah.
But the echo chamber of the South remains the same.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And for people like us, mm-hmm. It doesn't really pan its way.
Right, right.
Because what we're looking for is, in this echo chamber, is people who believe ideologically,
mm-hmm.
religiously,
mm-hmm.
and who want to do what their father did.
Oh yeah,
that's what they want to do,
or what their grandfather did, or what their family did, and there's always a sense of legacy. It's always, and that being said too, with just the difference between me being in Mobile, I suppose my hometown in Loosedale, Mississippi. I mean, even though we're sister counties, the environment and the community around is just it's vastly different. You know, it's another thing, you know, as far as Mobile compared to Loosedale is so much more progressive, and it does feel like a completely different environment for the most part. But like you said, there is still that, I guess you'd call it heritage, mm-hmm. of the way the communities and the people around it grow up in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Same thing, like when I left Kennedy, I left with a guy that I grew up with. We graduated high school, we did the community college thing, and then he decided he wanted to go to the University of South Alabama.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go to the University of Mobile, and so mm-hmm. we'll get an apartment and we'll try it.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing about that for us, for both of us, was the idea that we were about to step outside of the echo chamber.
Oh, yeah.
For the first time, and like, not a big deal because we just left the north side of Alabama for the south side, but just like you said, there's a thought about Mobile that lends itself to the idea of being progressive.
Oh, yeah.
And artistic in a way that there's enough people here that you can lose yourself
mm-hmm.
in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a chance that you might make something of it.
Yeah.
But it won't be your start or finish point.
Yeah.
It's only a stepping stone.
Yeah. I think so. Now, from what I've seen, just the short time of me actually living here, I mean, I've been coming to Mobile all my life. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was growing up, coming to Mobile, if we were coming to Mobile, it was kind of a privilege. It was kind of a big thing. Like if we were going to a movie, if we were going to the flea market, if we were doing anything like that, that was a big thing, you know, because we didn't have any of that in my hometown. The biggest thing we have over there is a Walmart.
We didn't even have that.
Yeah.
We had a caution light. We had a post office. Yeah. We had a gas station.
Yeah.
A barber shop.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like a Walmart was two towns yeah. over, you know?
Well, so I guess Loosedale was a little bit more progressive.
Yeah.
As far as having a Walmart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read when I started college, the second time I started college, when I started college at South Alabama, when when I left the prison, I was a prison guard. I wasn't in prison. I wasn't an inmate. I was a correctional officer for the state of Mississippi for over 5 years.
Yeah.
I was a prison guard. When I quit that and I started school at South, I left that and to pursue a career and go into film school. And I was also I was also working at a comic book store too, which is another reason why I'm here.
Right?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, big change in the line. Yeah. But I'll never forget in my first week at college, I was in the English department at South.
Yeah,
I was on the second floor, and I had to take a shit. I'm not gonna lie to you. I had to go, and I'm not one of those that usually I'll do that in a public place or somewhere, but I had to. It happened.
It had to.
So I go in there, and I'm in the stall, and I look to my left when I'm grabbing toilet paper, and right above the toilet paper console, there is a quote that I took a picture of that said, I don't know if it's still there or not, but it said, only when you leave your comfort zone is when you truly begin to live your life. And I said, whoa. Because that spoke to me. Who would have thought that a little quote in the English department...
In the shitter.
in South Alabama would really resonate with me while I'm taking a shit. I don't know if it was because I was getting dizzy off my own fumes or what, but it really did. Because it spoke to me, because I did a career of something that I thought I was going to do, and the idea of going to college, being I was 24 when I started, when I went back to college, I was 24, and just the idea of doing that, going in as a freshman, it really did bother me. I was scared. I left my hometown. I was going to be a college student. I was doing a new career that I'd never done before, working retail, that I wound up really getting into because I love comics, and I found out I was really good at sales.
Yeah.
It really did. It really got to me, and I was like, damn, that's so true. Like, I left my comfort zone.
Yeah.
I knew it was going to be hard, and I started to live my life.
To make it work.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that resonates with just so many levels. It really does.
It's every level.
See, I was kind of pegged. I was in JROTC in high school, so yeah. I was kind of pegged. But at the same time, I was still kind of under the radar with everybody until uniform day. And then everybody knew.
We all knew that.
Yeah. But I kind of understand that, but I kind of wanted to branch myself out.
Yeah.
Because I had cousins. I did, because my family, there's a shit ton of us, which is another reason why I moved from my hometown, because I'm related to everybody.
Yeah.
when I was in high school, you know, I had a... one of my cousins, he was in football, so I was friends with football players.
Yeah.
My other cousin, she was in band and in color guard, so I hung out with all the band geeks and, you know, everybody that was over there.
Uh-huh.
People that I'm still friends with to this day. You know, I was in JROTC and just these different groups of people that I always try to, you know, wander around into different areas. Just, you know, and I think that's expressed a lot of my personality as who I am now, as far as I don't cling to any particular group. I just kind of
Thing that rang true the more I think about it back to my high school days is looking back at that 16, 17, 18 year old getting ready to come out of high school into the real world.
Mm-hmm.
He had no sense of who he was.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's why I think like 18 is such a... I know they say, well, you're a legal adult at that age, but I think a lot of it now is just I'm like, dude, like you're still, you know, your brain doesn't start developing until you're 26.
Yeah.
You know, and I get that too, and you know, people at 18, they join the military or they'll do this and do that, and it's very beneficial to them, you know. Even though there's a lot of things you can't do, like they just recently updated the tobacco age to 21 now.
Yeah.
You know, I personally think if you're old enough to join the military and serve your country and everything, you should be able to drink and smoke and do whatever you want to do.
You know, growing up on the state line of Mississippi and Alabama, you know, Mississippi was always 18 and
Alabama's 19. Yeah.
And I remember when I turned 18, was like, well, I'll just go to Mississippi.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll find a way.
And then, like, with 21 now,
mm-hmm.
like, okay, it's the same as legal age.
Yeah.
Big whoop.
Yeah.
Because when I was 18,
mm-hmm.
I had somebody that could get me whatever I wanted.
Yeah. I bootlegged alcohol shit when I was 16. How I learned how to drive was bootlegging my drunk dad across the state and county line so he can get. That's how I learned how to drive.
There you go. Yeah. Kind of the same experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Real.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then when I turned 21 and it was legal, I was kind of over it.
Yeah.
Like, I still did it.
Yeah. But then you have when everybody else found out, that was another thing too, like with people you went to school with,
yeah.
if they found out that you turned 21 before they did.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey man, you want to go to this party? Yeah, dude, I'll come and hang out. All right, hey, we're gonna give you some money. Can you buy booze for everybody?
Oh, I see why.
And then you get invited to more parties until everybody else starts turning 21 and they're like, hey, yeah. you know, yeah. hey, what's up?
Oh, we don't need this guy. Going
on. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
and so Johnny and I we became friends and became boys through a job.
Oh yeah.
At Heritage. Cheers to that.
Cheers.
Thank you, Caleb.
It's a great, good company.
Yeah.
We
enjoyed my time there.
Enjoyed mine too. I learned a lot, and it helped the job that I do now at the hospital. that job probably helped.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Doing inventory and doing supply chain and everything. Yeah. yeah. I'm an inventory coordinator now for a hospital.
Worked out great.
So I guess so.
Gonna take a quick break. I'd like to plug Monson & Brothers. You can go to monsonandbrothers.com and check out all they had to offer. Just a couple of things that I would like to plug are the soaps. For my beardos out there, we got balms and oils, but with the soap, that's kind of a universal thing for dudes. Got one with olive oil that'll rehydrate the skin if you deal with dry skin. And then for those really hot Mississippi days that are coming, we got a charcoal activated soap that will literally pull that Mississippi humidity out of you to get that sticky off. Now, we're going to go to Black Betty. This is my buddy Joshua Cosby's moniker for his latest project. This is a song called Poor Kids Millennia.
Riding back to the neighborhood.
enjoy comic books.
Oh, yes. Very much so.
And so you have derived a lot of the way that you interact with people from those books.
Absolutely. What I've said before to people is I've learned more about how to... about different people around me. I've learned more about, mortality, like we were talking about morals and everything. I've learned more through comics and cartoons, and more cartoons based off of comics or comic book characters than I did from, you know, a lot of people, significant family members growing up. You talk about prejudice, living in the South, where you do have to deal with that. You're born in the families, or you're around people that, you know, subjugate people that look different or act differently from your family.
What has always sucked the most about prejudice is, like, even if I don't buy into it, I'm subjugated to it.
Yeah, yeah. And I felt that a lot, and a lot of it is, that just gives you the drive to act more to prove that you're not, like with me, like how I learned about it was, learning the moral code of, you don't judge somebody, or you don't mistreat somebody, or you don't hate somebody because the way they think differently from you, the way they look differently from you. I learned that from the X-Men. And that's when Stan Lee and Jack Kirby came up with the X-Men was during the 60s, was during the civil rights. That was the idea of it. It was a way of expressing to everybody about prejudice. The two main figureheads in the X-Men universe, Professor Xavier and Magneto, were a lot of people have compared them to Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. Like, yes. As far as their ideologies and everything.
Yes.
And that was a big thing. Professor Xavier believed that everybody, mutants and humans, could all live in harmony together and understand one another, and we can work together to make the world better. To whereas Magneto believed that the mutants were the next
superior race.
Were the superior race and the next evolutionary process of the Homo sapiens.
And the Homo sapiens who are not mutants should worship our... serve,
yeah, or they, and they would eventually,
or be annihilated,
or they would be eventually, they would eventually be evolved out, like Homo superior. The mutants would continue to evolve and become, right. And then Homo sapiens would be obsolete. So I learned that from the 90s animated cartoon that came on Fox Kids, which is later when I got into the comics, which I have collected, which you can see over there. Is also my favorite comic book artist, Jim Lee, who is the CEO or the editor of DC Comics now. That was the book. That book is broke the Guinness World Record for the most comics.
The Cyclops up top.
The Cyclops and the Wolverine cover. And funny story about that one too, that X-Men number one, that was the first time that they had to where they did the variants, to where they had one issue, like the number one, where it had different variants. There was different images of the comic.
Yeah.
And what you can do is, if you can look at the comic, you can hand me the comic.
Yeah.
And if you can see, like, Cyclops and Wolverine are both facing this way,
uh-huh.
And there's Iceman in the back, they're shooting him right here, and what this is Magneto. And so there is another image over here of Magneto.
Uh-huh.
And then behind Wolverine and Cyclops are the rest of the X-Men. And what they did was they took this image, so you see here, Jim Lee, who was the artist,
yeah,
that did
it, and
Scott Williams was the inker that did the inking and everything. This is a full image. That was the first time that they did that.
Wow.
Yeah. I actually have I wish I had the rest of them collected, but I don't, unfortunately. But that was the first time they did. That comic, that line broke the world record for most comics sold in 1992. That's when Marvel, their sales went up.
Uh-huh.
X-Men, definitely. That was, that was one of the things, that was definitely one of the moral compasses for me growing up.
Here's the image.
Yeah, the image right here. See, what they did was, this was all one image, and they broke each one down into a different variant cover. So there's the, like you said, the Wolverine and the Cyclops.
Which is what we just looked at.
Right, and then there's one variant of just Magneto, and then there's one of Rogue, Colossus, Gambit, and Psylocke.
My favorite, Gambit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This was kind of his, when he came into the team here. And this is actually, this run of the X-Men is the run that they branched, or they used for the animated series, the cartoon show. And this was the design. They used the design for the characters and everything, and the team lineup from this series. So,
which I guess is what makes it feel homey when I see it, you know?
Oh, yeah, you see it, and you get that. Like me, like, I look at this, or I look at any of this artwork from the comics, or really any of Jim Lee's work, and I immediately just remember, as a kid, you know, just...
Connecting with it
immediately.
And I guess that's the thing about, like, with comic books, like, you take Dragon Ball Z, or, like, what I was saying, X-Men, or those cartoons I grew up watching. There was always something more that I took away from it that I couldn't put my finger on until it got later. And it wasn't anything that I could pick up from society, from the folks that were around me.
Right. Right. It's definitely an escape.
It lent itself for my mind to go to a place to where it'd be like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Difference is not a bad thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the thing about X-Men. And I'm partial to DC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
extremely partial to Batman.
Same, yeah. if you can tell from my collection.
Yeah, but like with X-Men, it's like I hold a special place because like I loved that show as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Because all the differences, like, they were all different colors. They all had different things to bring to the table.
They were all from different places. Yeah. They were all from all, not only in the U.S., but different parts of the world. They were all from all these different countries. And
there was something about them.
Yeah. And it was also really cool, interesting, too, from being from the South, you know, and then you see a character like Rogue. She's from Mississippi.
Yeah.
She's from...
happens to be one of my favorite characters for that reason.
Yeah. And
she's
from
where I am.
And then I remember watching the episode, and I was just listening to her voice, and I'm like, gosh. And then later on, I was like, oh, she's from it's a fictional town, but she's from Mississippi.
Yeah.
She's quoted it in the show, and then you see in the comics, too. And then you got Gambit. Gambit's from Louisiana.
New Orleans or whatever.
Yeah, he's a, his name is Remy LeBeau.
Yeah.
And he's French Cajun. He's the Raging Cajun.
Yeah.
Love
that character.
You don't see a lot of that in other characters. You don't see a lot of other comic book characters from the South.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some. But that was for me the introduction for me. I was like, oh, this is cool. She sounds like me. And the voice actress, the played her too. I think she did a good job too. My personal opinion. There's some people that are like, oh, that was so fake. But I'm like, dude, I don't care. Like,
it's fine with me.
Something. But like you said with DC, I lean more towards DC. Batman is my favorite fictional character. I do have several other ones, but he was definitely still is one of my favorites, as far as following the story and the character and everything.
The thing about Batman to me is it's not only him, it's like what separates him from most.
Oh yeah.
Is that his power wasn't in a bottle.
No. It's the thing that makes Bruce Wayne super as a superhero, classified as a superhero, is his ambition, his drive to... Because everything, like him being Batman, is a mission. Like he has a mission. He says, I have to complete the mission. His mission is to protect and save the people of Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes him super, what makes him stands out between any other human is... his ambition and his drive to complete it. But the money helps, obviously.
Yeah.
But he used the money to his advantage. Even if he didn't, I've made this argument before, if Bruce Wayne came from a middle-class family, I think he still would have been able to come to some level of where he's at now, honestly. You know, I think because it's just his drive and his ambition, his determination to do what he needs to do is just so strong. Like, none of that's an object to him, you know.
Right.
But, I mean, that does help, though. You know, and he said it himself in the comics. He said, you know, it's good to have this, you know.
And I don't want to take anything from you, but yeah. This is one thing that we said before we started recording, mm-hmm. is, I agree completely, is mm-hmm. the difference between a lot of superheroes mm-hmm. and Batman mm-hmm. and Superman
yeah.
is that they don't become super when they step into the costume. They become themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always the intriguing thing about Batman to me personally. I mean, you got... I'll throw one example. Like Spider-Man, Peter Parker. You know, he got bit by the spider mm-hmm. and he became these powers, so he created a suit to become and created to be this persona. See, Bruce Wayne, when his parents died, when he was 8...
That's when he died.
He died. Bruce Wayne died. The kid died along with his parents. And at that time, that's when Batman was born.
Mm-hmm.
So when he's in the cave, when he's in the suit, when he's, you know, staying up all night, when he hasn't slept in over 24 hours because he's working on a case, and Alfred's bugging him, telling him, hey, look, Mr. Bruce, you need to go to sleep. You need to eat something. When he's in the cave... He's doing all that. When he's in the streets, when he's in Gotham, he is himself. When he's being Bruce Wayne, the playboy billionaire, that's an act.
It's a persona.
Exactly. It's, you know, he's pretending to be somebody else.
It's completely alternative to everything that you think about a role of being super.
Right.
That's what makes it...
Right.
Super. Right.
And that's what a lot of, like, the... actors, comic book fans, when you go to look at the actors that have portrayed these characters,
mm-hmm.
like, and I'll say it once and I'll say it again, and people are going to probably break me over the coals, but I loved Ben Affleck as Batman.
I liked it too.
Yeah. I his portrayal, I think he did a fantastic job. Because
I wanted more.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there's a difference between when he's at Lex Luthor's house and he's pretending to be Bruce and he's talking to Clark. Yeah, he's doing the act, you know, and I will say this too. Christian Bale, I think he did a decent job at doing that also, for the most part, but I'm not going to get into that.
Yeah.
But my whole point is... There's a, there's such a you know, and they've had stories, any comic book fan's going to know what I'm referring to, but an identity crisis, and, of these heroes.
Yeah.
They all have some struggle or have some kind of, you know, struggle that they have with an identity, whether it's discovering themselves or trying to put on, blend in with the rest of their surroundings or whatever. So, you know, it's interesting when you really dip into it instead of just saying, oh, this is just this person that has superpowers and dresses up weird and saves people.
Right.
You know, there's so much more to take away from it that a lot of people don't understand.
Let's go there. So comic books kind of gave you a bigger perspective and morality on the whole culture as a whole.
Oh, absolutely. When I was growing up, I didn't even hang out with another person that wasn't the same race as me until I was like in middle school. Because one, the neighborhood that I grew up in was, one, it was mostly my family, and two, it's just, there was nobody around. And stuff that I was told by my family about these other people that I never met, it just, you know...
Stuck with
me. It stuck with me. And me not knowing as a child, that's just what I believed because that's what I was told. Because when your parents tell you something, or you go to church and they tell you something, that's the way it is.
That's the echo chamber, and it gets reinforced time and time again.
But because of comics and TV shows that I watched, there was always that little voice in my head that told me that something just doesn't feel right about this. And I got older, and I will say too, my grandmother, God rest her soul, you know, she was kind of that little voice in my head too that also told me, you know, we're all created equal. You love everybody. You treat everybody the same as you want to be treated. So that stuck with me also. You know, that was that one voice, out of a family that I listened to that, you know, was a good moral compass.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she did embellish my comic books and, you know, my interest in that too. And I think she understood too that, you know, the moral compass that it also directed me towards. But the thing about it too, like going into it and then like me trying to go out and, you know, and social anxiety of not knowing anybody, you know, just being completely nervous around all these different people that I never interacted with.
Yeah.
It was really hard, you know, to go through, and, you know, I'm not saying I had it rough or anything, but
right.
I just wanted to get along with everybody, you know, and I wanted to, and I just, you know, but even everybody, it was even my own family members, they were like, "Oh, he's a little weird.
He's a little off.
He's a little off." And that's what I got told a lot. And my teachers told my mom that, my parents that, when I was in school, when I got held back in fifth grade, they said, "He's a little off. He's not progressing like everybody else." Yeah, and they, I was the class clown or whatever. I was always doing Ace Ventura impressions. I was always drawing and not paying attention, and I was disrupting the class because I thought it was funny, because I saw stuff on TV that I thought was funny and it made me laugh. And yeah. I was like, "Oh, this makes me laugh. It makes me happy. I want to make everybody else laugh and happy."
Okay.
And you know, and I didn't realize, you know, and the teacher frowned upon that, and she got to the point where she isolated me from the rest of the classroom. Like, I had my own little desk. She put me off in the corner by myself, to where she just, so I wouldn't bother nobody. That's what she said. She said, "So you don't bother anybody." I didn't mean to get off topic.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, you're completely on.
Yeah.
I think just the special of X-Men is like the idea of morality, even though that we look different and we're incredibly different. It's mm-hmm. like we can interact, and as Professor Xavier,
mm-hmm.
belief is that we can all be, we can interact peacefully.
Yeah, we're all in this together. We're all fighting. We're all wanting to go through our lives and enjoy in the pursuit of our own happiness, and we can all do it together. You know.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from that too. And watching the show, the cartoon as a kid on Fox Kids, and then later on when I was able to get my hands on comic books, because we didn't have any comics where I grew up. You know, we didn't have a comic book store or anything. You know, I had to, that was another great thing about coming to Mobile. I came to Mobile and we went to the flea market. I knew there was Mr. Steve, God rest his soul. He has a comic book store.
Yeah.
So I'd go out there and I'd get quarter comics or dime comics or whatever. You know, and I didn't care, you know, when they were written or who drew them or whatever. Yeah. It was just having comics. I still got some to this day.
Just the accessibility of it.
Right, exactly. It was just being the chance of having them. And it really didn't matter what I grabbed. It was just, I was excited to have it, you know, and have it and read it and learn what I could from it. So, definitely. And not just the X-Men, too. I mean, you look at these other characters.
It goes deeper.
Oh, yeah,
I absolutely. Mean, we didn't even mention mm-hmm. one of your favorite from Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Daredevil. Old Blind Boy.
Yeah, yeah. Daredevil, for me, okay, and I'm going to get raked around the coals for this one too, but Daredevil, how I got introduced to Daredevil was when 2005, 2006, I think it was, when the Daredevil movie came out with Ben Affleck. That's what introduced me to it. And I remember going to see the movie, and it was on Valentine's Day, too. Oh, yeah. Of course, I was a kid. My grandmother, the same grandmother, she was the one also that always took us to the movies and stuff and all that. Yeah. So I got to do that. Even though what started my Batman obsession, I remember this is my earliest childhood memory. I know this is crazy, but the very first childhood memory that I have is I remember in 1994 or 95. I was born in 91, by the way, tells you how old I am. The very first movie my parents ever took me to go see was Batman Forever, Val Kilmer, the Val Kilmer movie. And I think that's what started it with the Batman, with movies, Batman. Because I watched the animated series growing up too, because it had premiered in 92, and I watched it on TV as a kid. But I remember that. But the Daredevil was another character that I just thought was so cool. I mean, he was the red suit, you know, he was blind, he had these really cool powers to where he can, you know, he had sonar detection. And I remember seeing the movie, and I thought it was just so cool when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And then also, when they were advertising the movie, they were doing reruns of the Spider-Man animated TV show that I also watched growing up. That was on Fox Kids. And they were showing there was an episode where Daredevil was in the show. And they showed the origin of Daredevil and everything, and they re-released the VHS copy of the show to promote the movie, and I got it when I was a kid.
Yeah,
and that was another thing that really got me into it. So that's when I started getting into Daredevil too, and that's when I realized, oh, there's different comic books, and you know, and the movies definitely when in 99 and 2000 when the movies started kicking off, especially too when the X-Men movies came out. That really reinforced, you know, that I was like, oh, they're doing movies of this stuff now, you know, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, because I couldn't get the comics, but I knew if the movie came out, I can go and rent the movie, or I can save my money up and go buy the movie at Walmart or something.
I'm going to shift gears from talking about comics to wanting to become a comic.
Oh, yeah. Stand up.
And you allured to it, but like, I want to spend some time, like, just, what is comedy? Like, let's talk about that.
Do you mean a philosophical way, or do you mean a literal way?
Like, your take on it.
My take on your comedy. Just comedy in general is, damn, you put me on the spot now. I'm telling you. Well, this is just me, my take on it. All comedy, or most comedy, or you see, and even in, you know, the classic literature, comedy is branched off of tragedy. Comedy, a lot of comedy is birthed from tragedy. You know, and you hear a lot of people, you know, you hear people say, like, oh, this comic, he said this joke about this terrible thing. He made a joke about this terrible thing. We shouldn't laugh at that. Well, that's the thing. That's where comedy does come from, tragedy to an extent.
That's the thing. Is one thing.
Now, there's a difference in between, you know, being an asshole and
levels.
Yeah. There are levels, absolutely. But for me, like, I make fun, like, the material that I've written and my bits that I have come from tragic things in my life that I have made comical.
That's what I like. And that's where I take my comedy. It's like, I am first do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make fun of myself before I make fun of any of them.
Oh, absolutely.
And I will completely rag myself and death.
And you can let people make fun of you also.
Yeah, and I'm totally cool with
that. Yeah, and you won't get butt hurt. People can't, you know, I'm going through something with this guy that I work with right now. Like, he hasn't spoken to me all week. He's barely said anything to me because last week, like, we all rip on one another. We do that. If buddies, you work together, you rip on, you bust each other's balls.
We busted each other's balls when we worked together.
Yeah, exactly. And look at us now.
Yeah. we're still busting
but
balls.
But, like I, you know, we'd rip on each other, and I said something to him, and apparently it pissed him off. And, you know, he tried to say something back to me, and then I just came right back with him. And then he got all butt hurt.
Yeah.
And then, you know, which is ironic, because he's the same guy that's saying, "Oh, everybody's so PC. Everybody's so, they're snowflakes. Everybody's getting butt hurt." And I'm like, dude, well, you're acting look the at same you. Way. Yeah.
Until I come at you, you say that.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's neither here nor there, but, you know, but...
Yeah.
But comedy to me, it is a way of for people to express to show comedy in within tragedy, you know, and it's a way for people to come together. Because I mean, the world is already there's just so much that goes on the world. There's so much that goes on the people's lives, and if you're able to make somebody laugh through whether it's something that happened to you or didn't happen to you or something tragic that you can turn into something comical, or you know, it's you know, that's what it means to me.
My comedy, mm-hmm. what I write to and what I display with my own jokes,
mm-hmm.
is it'll always be reminiscent of Mitch Hedberg and Dimitri Martin. It's like I will always be extremely observational.
Oh yeah, see, and
you can't get away
and
from
that's
it.
that's what people like people, you know, a lot of people don't understand too, and that comedy is subjective. Comedy is always going to be subjective. It's going to be subjective to everybody. There's also, I'm a fan of comedy in general, whether it's prop comedy, observational comedy, dark comedy, whatever.
Yeah.
If it makes me laugh, I'm a fan of it. Yeah. You know, that's what comedy is.
Yeah.
You know, if you're entertained by something. If it entertains you personally, that's entertainment. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, me with comedy, you know, there's some comics that I listen to. There's some people like I'll listen to Daniel Tosh, and there's some people like, how could you listen to him?
I think he's great.
Because I think he has funny stuff.
He is so non-PC, it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even that. It's just his material, the way he delivers his setups, just the way he does things.
And it's he's funny. Not afraid to put himself in it.
Oh, yeah, because he knows. He said it himself. He says, I say outlandish things for a career. I know there's going to be consequences. That's his shtick.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he wants to do. Now, that being said, there are a few things that he said that I was like, whoa. But, well, you know, again, comedy is subjective.
Yeah.
You know, I love Joe Rogan. I like his stand-up. I love his podcast. I have one friend of mine cannot stand Joe Rogan.
I like his podcast, and I'm not a big fan of his comedy.
Yeah, see, some people are like that.
I like
you his... like his inquisitive
yes.
talking, like him talking to people instead of doing. See, I think he's. I like his stand up. I like his podcast more, but I mean, I love his stand. Well, I love them both, but I mean,
yeah.
And I mean, even that when I was growing up, like. Stand-up comedy, when you thought about stand-up comedy, you thought of four dudes.
Yeah. Foxworthy, Bill White,
Ron Wright, Bill Engvall, and Larry the Cable Guy. That was it.
Yeah.
Not to take anything away from any of them. They were all...
blue collar.
Yeah.
Which is where we're from.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what that attracted... you know, the environment where we grew up in. Because I could tell you, when I was a kid, dude, I could quote for you the entire 12 Redneck Days of Christmas Jeff Foxworthy did. I could, I sang that every year when I was a kid because I knew it. Some people out there listening, like, your parents actually let you listen to that shit. I'm like, well...
yeah, they did.
But, you know, and then I listened to them growing up, and I tell you, and then deeper when I started really, really getting into comedy, and I started getting into all these other comics, mostly because of my two best friends from Loosedale, who I pretty much call my older brothers. They're like my mentors. They've kind of helped mold me into the person that I am today.
Yeah.
When I started learning about Dave Chappelle, when I started learning about Zane McKinnison, when I started learning about Bill Hicks.
Mm.
Bill Hicks changed my world, you know.
See, you introduced me to Bill, and I still need more.
Oh, yeah.
But my goodness, when I got introduced to Dave Chappelle.
Oh, yeah. Dave Chappelle, it was just...
the king of sketch.
Yeah. Yeah. He just perfected the craft. He really did. You know, and I don't mean to say that as being pretentious or sound like I know what I'm talking about or like I've been a comic for whatever. I haven't even done an open mic night yet, but I'm just me, you know, just somebody that has dabbled into researching comedy or just comics in general. I mean, he really has honed it. Like, he just gets on. He'll get in, like, some places, like, he's not even supposed to be on stage. He'll show up, and he'll just get up on stage, and he'll just sit down, like you and me, and he'll just, like, one of his specials, he's just sitting there on a stool, and he's just talking to everybody, and he said, hey, has anybody got a cigarette? And they'll give him a cigarette, and he'll just sit there, and he'll talk. A lot of times, he doesn't have anything written out.
Yeah, he just goes up. He's just funny.
Yeah, he just goes up, because he's perfected the craft.
Yeah.
And I mean, even that, I mean, George Carlin was another one. George Carlin, if you haven't listened to George Carlin was another one too that just, you know.
Now, Carlin is something like a Mount Rushmore type face on comedy.
Oh, yeah. I think him, Bill Hicks, Richard Pryor, if there was a Mount Rushmore of comedy, I think they would definitely be on it. Carlin, Pryor. When I got more into comedy, when outside of the blue collar, mm-hmm. you know, guys, and which I'll say this too, I love Ron White too. Ron White too, his stuff.
The only one I don't find funny is Ron Engvall. I don't.
You
find
mean
him.
Bill Engvall?
Bill.
Yeah.
I don't find Bill Engvall funny.
Yeah. There's a few bits that he's done before that I thought was funny, but. You know,
here's your sign.
Yeah.
It gets old.
Yeah, it got old for me growing up because that was also anytime you did something stupid or you did something, everybody in the area, every
here's
dad.
Your
that,
sign.
Was like, that was like the dad joke of the South for 15 years. It was like, you did something, son, well, you know, you don't need to do that. There's your sign. You know, just like Bill Engvall. Yeah, there you go. There's your stupid son.
Yeah.
You know, that did get old.
Yeah.
But you listen to his other stuff, his other bits that he has besides out there. I mean, he's got some funny stuff. He really does. I mean, even
like his more sexual stuff.
Well, I mean, just his other bits that don't revolve around like Here's Your Sign was like the big thing
that was the blue collar comedy tour.
That was the equivalent of Jeff Foxworthy, You Might Be a Redneck.
Yeah.
That's what that was. Or Larry the Cable Guy's Get Her Done. That was like their signature thing.
Or Ron White's Potato Salad, I guess.
Yeah, that was that was another thing too. That was just a whim for him that just stuck. That was just something that he said that stuck. I'll say that with all them guys too. They have other bits that just those are the things that the things that really got extremely popular with them that just stuck with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened, I think, a lot with Chappelle too. Even though he said he left the Chappelle show because they were kind of the whole Hollywood thing, the whole Hollywood world was getting him to do things he didn't want to do. But there was a lot of things he felt like he was being a product of, like the Rick James thing and. Or
Unity.
Yeah, or I'm Rick James, bitch. Like, all that, like, you know, I think that just became like
Clayton Bixby.
Yeah.
The black white supremacist.
That was pretty great. But, you know, it's just
our
like,
own Bixby.
Yeah, it's just like a lot of actors that they get afraid of being of typecasted. They get typecasting being for y'all that don't know, and if I screw this up, let me know. But actors afraid of getting typecasted is you're an actor, and every role that you get, you basically play the same character everything you play. If you're a bad guy in one movie, and then you keep getting, you know, or you play the dude like Sean William Scott was a victim of typecasting.
He was.
In the American Pie movies mm-hmm. and everything, he pretty much played the same character.
The party guy.
Yeah. Or Jim Carrey playing the comedy guy, and then he did then the movie, the number 23.
When you saw that, it was like, I can't even like this movie because he's not even himself.
Which is still a great movie, too.
It's not a bad film.
Yeah, even like a Truman Show, or you look at when he did the Andy Kaufman biopic, Man on the Moon.
Adam Sandler done this himself. Think about this. Did you see Uncut Gems?
Uncut Gems? No, I haven't seen that yet, but I've heard nothing but good things about that.
Now,
that it
the thing is like the most serious thing that I would say Sandler was involved in was Click. It's all Billy or Happy Madison Productions.
Yeah.
Click was a very serious film, but the thing about Click is Sandler came out.
Yeah.
You saw Sandler.
Yeah.
Uncut Gems was one of the first films I saw Sandler in. Had been watching him for over 20 years.
Yeah. His other movies have been kind of unwatchable.
And never saw him once.
Yeah.
I saw Adam Sandler being somebody. Yeah. I saw him being an actor.
Yeah.
For the first time, I didn't see Adam Sandler.
Oh, wow. Yeah. See, I've heard that too about the movie. It's just, he is just so out of, you know, the stereotype or the typecast that what he's done.
That
it's
people
just,
don't
but
like
he,
it.
That he just... But he killed it though. Like
he nailed it.
But it's just so hard to, because you're like, it's Adam Sandler, it's Waterboy.
Yes, yeah, it's and Billy Madison.
And then he
Madison.
Tries to do the serious role, and people can't take him seriously. And that
ain't that what every comedian tries to do in their late career?
In a way. Well, you see with some of these other actors too. Again, back to comic books. Ben Affleck when he got casted as Batman. Or, you know, there people were thinking, oh, he's going to fuck up Batman.
He really wanted that, though.
They threw Geely up in his face. They threw Daredevil up in his face. And I think he still killed it. I mean, even before the internet, even before the first, the 1989 Tim Burton movie with Michael Keaton, there was an uproar.
I liked him as Vulture in Spider-Man.
I still haven't seen those yet, but I heard he did good. But even when he got casted, when pre-internet, when they found out about it, people were throwing a fit about it. They were like, Mr. Mom's going to be Batman? What the hell, you know? And then even now with Robert Pattinson getting casted as Batman now, you know, they're throwing up Twilight. Fantastic. Did you ever see The Lighthouse with him and William Dafoe?
I've never seen a Twilight. That was the first movie I saw with Pattinson.
The first movie I saw Pattinson in was Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. He was a...
Oh, I take that back. That was the first
Cedric,
movie.
Yeah, Cedric
he was
Diggory.
The guy. He
Cedric
was the guy. Diggory. He was the guy in the competition.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was that guy.
Yeah.
So the second film I saw...
Yeah. That's after Harry Potter, that's when he...
Yeah.
You know, that's when he... They were like, oh, we need to get this guy. Yeah. You know, and then he did modeling and everything.
Yeah.
All right, he could have done... I don't know. But anyway, my point is, when it was released or announced that he was going to be playing Batman, you know, same thing.
Everybody people crapped on Ben.
Yeah,
same thing.
Heath Ledger, when they said, you know, he was going to
be
cast as
the
Joker, I broke back mountain, you know, and or 10 Things I Hate About You or whatever, he still did a fantastic job. You know, and I'm not going to lie, too. When I heard about Joaquin Phoenix getting cast as the Joker for the Joker movie, which I finally got around to watching not too long ago.
I haven't watched it yet, but...
Dude, I highly recommend watching that movie. Now, at me as a hardcore Batman comic book fan, there was a lot of things that I, you know, I'm like, okay, I didn't like what they did or didn't like, but I understand why they changed what they did. Thought it was a fantastic movie. It was...
At face value, just taking it as a movie.
Well, even that as a comic book character, too, it was intriguing. And I know a lot of people were worried about, oh, why are you idolizing this homicidal maniac? I was like, well, no, you're not idolizing. You understand that this man is a very...
He's a product of his society.
Well, not only that, but you do catch yourself feeling a little bit of sympathy for him, but you still understand that there's... You know, there's still no excuse for the things that he did. You know, there's still no excuse for the things that he did. And, you know, it didn't matter, like, how he came up or whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know, and there's a lot of people that are, you know, the whole thing around it, too, was also people are like, oh, if you watch this movie, you were, you know, you're going to, you know, you have a more likely chance, or we're afraid it's going to motivate people to commit these atrocities. I think a lot of that too is because it was Todd Phillips who directed the movie. You know, Martin Scorsese produced the movie, helped produce the movie. And I think a lot of it, what he was taken from, what Todd Phillips did was from this movie, he took a lot of inspiration from The King of Comedy, which was a Scorsese movie, and Taxi Driver, which was also a Scorsese movie. And Taxi Driver was the movie that motivated the guy to shoot Ronald Reagan, and because he thought he was doing it for Jodie Foster. So people were thinking, it's like, oh, well, if he's taking inspiration from these movies and this was the outcome of these movies for these things that happened, we're afraid that it may motivate these certain individuals to commit, you know, follow the same pattern. And that's the thing is, it's like
people don't understand. And that came out.
Yeah.
That came out. Mm-hmm. I remember before the Joker came out, there was a fear.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a huge fear of, like, how society was subjecting Joaquin's Joker to be the way that he was.
Yeah. There's different, like, that's the thing about movies, too. It's the thing about movies, it's the thing about comedy. You know, it's the thing about how you read a text or how you read a comment on Facebook. It's the way the person that's reading it, they can interpret it differently than another person.
Absolutely.
Every, think about this. Every person that you ever met in your life, each person has a different interpretation of you
they
than
do.
Another person. And that's the same way, that can be the same way in literature, art, anything.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know why there's a lot of people that's just like, oh, these people should believe the same thing that I do. It's like they're going to have a book club and believe, oh, hey, we read this chapter. Don't you agree? And, and there's discussion to be talked about it, but there's a lot of people that just want to, another one of my favorite comic book titles or stories of all time is The Watchmen. I've recently been watching the HBO show. I haven't finished it yet. And I remember when that was coming out, everybody's like, oh, why is The Watchmen so political? This show is too political. I'm like, did you read the comic? Have you read anything that the writer, the creator, has that Alan Moore has written? V for Vendetta?
He's kind of that way.
He's kind of, you know...
That's what he does.
Yeah, I mean, but not only that, I mean, it's... He's a fantastic writer. I love Alan Moore. Don't get me wrong. I think he's fucking out there. I mean, he's out there. But, the stories that he's written... He has written probably the most... Matter of fact, right there in my collection, I have a couple of his work. The Killing Joke, which basically that was the first written origin story that we've gotten from the Joker. That origin cemented with the origin that they kind of followed on within the comic book in the main continuity for the Joker, with him falling into the chemicals and everything like they did in the 89. You know, Tim Burton, Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, which is the way that...
And in the animated series, which based around the 89 movie.
Right.
Yeah, with Mark Hamill's Joker.
Which is the way that we know him.
Right, that's how we were
introduced. And that's why we have this comfort, like you said, way earlier with Heath Ledger's Joker.
Yeah.
Or even with Joaquin.
Yeah. Each actor that has portrayed the Joker has, even with Batman too, I think... Each one has portrayed a different vision of that character, I think.
I agree.
I think each one kind of portrayed a different... Because, each one's directed by a different director most of the time.
Yeah.
Or some of the time.
And that's where you want to pull your weight anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You're not worried about... I mean, the actor matters, but...
Right.
Real talk, it's the director. And then
I
producer.
Think, yeah,
that's who you watch. If I trust the director,
yeah,
it's gonna be good.
Yeah, it's
like I wouldn't give the guy who directed Transformers,
Michael Bay.
Yeah, I don't watch anything that he does.
Yeah, he when I found out he was in the Ninja Turtles, I couldn't do it.
Squatted.
I couldn't do it. Like I knew deep in my gut it was gonna be a bad thing.
Total drain.
And you know what's bad is there was some leaked footage and stuff of early development for that movie.
And what's wild is he got Megan Fox again, and I was like, I don't care if you get Megan Fox.
Yeah.
You won't make it fine enough for me to watch.
She is not April O'Neil to me.
No.
And then the second movie,
it's gotta be a redhead.
Then they got Not only that, I mean, just Megan Fox. I mean, she just, she can't act, in my opinion.
And she's got these big hands.
I never looked at her hands.
Oh, my God.
I never looked at her and was like, damn, she's got big hands. I'm not going to lie to you.
I went there. I was like...
Well, you're a gentleman, because I wasn't looking at her hands, brother.
One time, I don't know what scene it was on Transformers, but I remember being like 15 years old and seeing like Transformers 1 or however old it was, and I was like, my God. She's got man hands.
I'm gonna have to go back and watch the movie now and be like, damn, she does got big hands. She's got catcher's mitts.
Yeah. It's like, look at her. She can catch a baseball with no glove.
Oh my God. Damn. But yeah, I knew the Ninja Turtles. I knew that was gonna be a wreck. And then I saw the first trailer and I was like, no, I can't. I can't do it. I can't.
I'll take that.
I mean, I love the Ninja Turtles too. That's another one of my staples and also in my martial arts career, and everything. So, I haven't, and that's a bad thing too. I haven't even seen the movies, but I already know just from looking at them, I can tell. I don't want to be that guy that's been like, oh, that movie's garbage. Well, have you seen it? No, I haven't. No, how do you know it's garbage if you haven't seen it? I'm like, dude, just trust me.
You ever seen Transformers? Wasn't good, was it?
See, that was one of those. See, Transformers was, I can't really comment a lot on Transformers because that show, or the original show that came out in the 80s, I missed that radar. When I was growing up, the only Transformers show that was on was Beast Wars, which was like one of the first early CGI cartoons when they started developing those in the 90s.
Yeah.
And I loved that as a kid. Because I'm not a car guy. I'm not an automotive person at all.
Yeah.
You know, which is funny because that's how we met. We were working at an automotive salvage
yard.
Me either.
Like,
I'm not a car.
I don't give two craps. As long as my car runs, I don't care.
Yeah, me too. I don't get into cars or anything like that. So I wasn't one of those kids that, like, I had. My dad bought us a bunch of Hot Wheels, but they were all like Dale Earnhardt, like the collectors Hot Wheels,
Monte Carlo.
But I never got into it. But Beast Wars was cool because, and I actually have the first season. I have the first season in my collection over there. But they were cool because they were Transformers, but they were animals.
Yeah.
And then they would transform and, you know, the robot form and Optimus, which isn't the same as Optimus Prime. This Optimus, his name was Optimus Primal, which was this show, come to find out, that show was actually a prequel to the 1984 the Optimus Prime. So
yeah,
but that's what drew my attention to that. But so I can't really. I've seen some of the Transformers, the Michael Bay Transformers movie, but you know, it's just like every other Michael Bay movie. It's like explosions, you know. So
way overdone.
I'll tell you, one of my favorite YouTube videos is the Epic Rap Battles of History.
Oh my lord,
I love that. They did one of the directors, they did Alfred Hitchcock versus Steven Spielberg, and then later on in the video, then Quentin Tarantino shows up and Stanley Kubrick comes in, and then Michael Bay shows up.
Oh yeah,
it's fucking great. I love it. It's great. How did we get onto this? Damn you, Michael Bay! You keep showing up.
Yes, you. Well, Johnny, it's been another episode of Poor Salt. Let's cut it off right there. We might pick up in a bit.
Oh hell yeah, absolutely.
We'll cut it right there.
Cool.
News and notes. Thank you so much for listening to Porch Talk. If you haven't done so already, I would ask that you would rate, review, and subscribe to the show on whatever platform it is that you're listening to on. We are on the social medias, Facebook, Instagram, and the Twitters, YouTube. YouTube, if you wanted to slap a still image on your television or some more of the visual things that we do. We have videos on Facebook as well. You can get involved with the community that way. Enough of that with your music. This is The Blips, Inside Out. I got
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.